Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 268. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. Wow, what a fabulous season we're having for local flowers. So much creativity and beauty has been going on as many of you are closing up the season for field-grown flowers. The frost has arrived for many flower farmers, but the planning for off-season activities continues. And I love how much inventiveness is out there extending through the winter as you generate income and sustain your business model. For designers, florists, and their clients, the thoughts of harvest, home, and holiday are top of mind. By the time you hear this, slowflowers.com will have released its first editorial content package to the media, and yes, our imagery and story tips focused around harvest, home, and holiday. Our next package, Slow Flowers Valentine's Day, will be released on January 15th, but we need your submissions by December 1st. This package will highlight romantic American-grown and Canadian-grown floral designs with an emphasis on domestic roses as an alternative to imported ones, or new botanical options for Valentine's Day. Participation is open to all premium members on slowflowers.com or for a nominal fee to standard members. Look for details in our next Slow Flowers newsletter out November 1st. And by the way, you can subscribe to that newsletter at deborahprinzing.com. One of the most rewarding things I've experienced since launching the Slow Flowers movement has been meeting emerging floral entrepreneurs and witnessing how their businesses flourish. Today, we're returning to two floral enterprises featured on previous episodes of the Slow Flowers podcast, and I want to share their updates with you. First, you'll hear from Mary Kate Kanane of The Local Bouquet in Little Compton, Rhode Island. And next, you'll hear a conversation with Molly Cobelt and Heidi Joint of Field and Florist, which operates a Chicago design studio and a Three Oaks, Michigan-based flower farm. Mary Kate and The Local Bouquet were originally featured in episode 138, which aired April 2014. You'll hear our follow-up discussion about how the business changed from a partnership with Maureen Aziz, Mary Kate's sister-in-law, to a sole proprietorship. Mary Kate and I will discuss the pain and pleasure of going solo and what that has meant as she also juggles three small children and the demands of countless wedding clients. Here's more about The Local Bouquet from the website, and it's titled A Mission to Support the American Flower Farmer. At The Local Bouquet, we have taken the two things we love, weddings and fresh seasonal flowers, and combined them to bring you the most beautiful designs for your special day. We are committed to creating gorgeous floral decor that complements the chosen time of year of your wedding using 100% local and American-grown flowers only. The Local Bouquet's ingredients are gathered or foraged fresh from flower fields and sourced from local flower farms. We think flowers should come from local farms and be free of chemicals. That's why we are committed to the field-to-vase movement that is happening across the U.S. as we celebrate local flowers and American flower farmers. Mary Kate believes that origin matters and values providing unique, fresh, and stunning flowers that are eco-conscious and organic. The second part of today's episode features field and florists Heidi Joint and Molly Cobelt. The women were my podcast guests for episode 148 in July 2014. At the time, these entrepreneur farmer florists were farming on their second piece of land, owned by a friend of a friend and located outside Chicago. Wow, a lot has changed in 2016, with Field and Florist move last fall to a larger parcel of land in Three Oaks, Michigan. In the works for a while, the shift to a more permanent place to farm flowers has allowed Field and Florist to significantly scale its growing operation, with the opportunity to experiment with spring greenhouse production of ranunculus, Icelandic poppies, and more. A large increase in acreage for field production, including peonies, garden roses, and of course, more dahlias, and the chance to wild forage, the duo has continued to serve Chicago's floral marketplace in year one of their new chapter. From April through October, Heidi and Molly grow and harvest direct from their farm. In the winter months, they source flowers from certified, sustainable sources within the United States. In 2015, Apartment Therapy included Field & Florist in its top 10 under 40 design and food list. And Martha Stewart Weddings named Field & Florist on its list of 62 top floral designers. To quote Molly and Heidi on their blog post about that inclusion, whoa. Please enjoy these conversations and visit DeborahPrinzing.com to find the show notes to episode 268, where you can find new photos of the local bouquet and Field & Florist work and follow links to their social places. Back to the Slow Flowers podcast with Deborah Prinzing. And today we're going to do something really fun. We're going to have the Where Are They Now episode. And the first of my two guests is Mary Kate Kinane of the Local Bouquet in Little Compton, Rhode Island. Hi, Mary Kate.
Hi, Deborah.
Thanks for getting on the line with me.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking about doing this for months. So thanks for your patience. And what inspired this is that many of you may have recalled hearing Mary-Kate in 2014 when she was a guest on episode 138, and I'll put that link on our show notes if you want to go back and hear chapter one of this story, but we're ready for chapter two. And I'm going to be doing this periodically to catch people up on the changing life of floral entrepreneurs. When you're a small business owner, you have to be nimble and flexible, and I would imagine that's how your story has gone, Mary Kate. You've had a lot of changes since we last got you on the episode, on the podcast, right?
Yes, definitely.
So give us a little snapshot of what's going on with the Local Bouquet, and then maybe we can talk about some of the lessons and decisions that you've had to make as you've kind of gone to the next phase of your business.
Yeah, sure. Since we talked in 2014, I have become the sole owner of the company. I started this company with my sister-in-law back in 2013. And we started it from the ground up. It was a startup. And in 2015, in January, she had her son premature. And so she made the amazing decision to be a full-time mom. And I fully supported that. And so at the beginning of 2015, I completely took over the business by myself and just started really running fast. I knew what I wanted to do to make it work for my personal life and also to grow the company in a direction that I wanted to so badly. So on a personal note, I've had my third child this year.
Yeah, it's not like you're a slacker. You've been building your family at the same time you've been building your business, right?
And so it was kind of a little bit of a blessing that we parted ways business-wise and that I could take over the company because I could really tailor it to what I needed as a mom, as a stay-at-home mom, and as the owner of the company. Not only could I make my own schedule, but I could also really just focus on the things that got me out of bed in the morning and really inspired me. Mm-hmm.
Can you describe when we had you on the podcast in the past? You and Maureen were doing a really big focus on weddings,
yes,
primarily, right?
Yes,
and with an emphasis on locally sourced flowers. But you were at the time struggling with trying to find enough flowers.
I know. Funny to look back on that episode. Like, we were so green at it and really struggling to make the connections in the industry here in New England. And it's so cool to look back and see just in 3 years how far the Local Bouquet has come and what a little name we've made for ourselves and the amazing connections we've made with the farmers here. It's so incredible. I've got three main farms that I buy from that are all within a 15-minute drive from my house, one of which delivers right to my front door. And so these are people that have become, you know, friends of the family and that really mean a lot to me and my business, and that I just continuously buy from every single week. The wholesalers, two in the area, are really stepping up and knowing that people in the industry want American grown, and so they're carrying more. I felt, you know, a little out of place when I was the only one asking for American grown, but it's since, thanks to you, Deborah, has become this amazing phenomenon, and And so the wholesalers are catching on and they're really buying more for us from California and New Jersey and keeping us alive in the winter months here in New England.
I was going to say, especially when your beloved local farms can't produce, you can maybe get product from Florida or hothouses or West Coast. That's really encouraging, but I have to applaud you for developing those relationships. I mean, I was really impressed earlier this year with the, it might even have been right when you had your baby, but you had this series of design workshops and each one of them was built around what one of your farms was producing. And that, what did you call that series? And can the you talk farmer, about that a little bit?
It was called the Farmer Florist Series. And I have to give a shout out to Holly Chapel. I'm a Chapel designer. I joined in 2015 because I was just really wanting to connect with the designers across the United States, especially ones that were pushing their design game. I wanted to be learning from the best of the best. And, you know, I'm in Little Compton, I'm in a tiny, tiny town. So it's easy to kind of sit back and look at the social media, but I think it's so great to get out there and make those personal connections. And so for me, when I was thinking about, I have taught the design classes since the beginning of the Local Bouquet, but I was really, really interested in teaching a higher level course. I went to school for education to be a teacher. And so I think that was kind of driving me to, you know, the Floral Crown classes are great. Girls Night Out classes are great, but I wanted to attribute some, you know, of my knowledge and, my gratitude for the farmers that I had made connections with and share that with the local community, whether that be another floral designer that was just starting out or somebody in the garden club or just somebody who had a green thumb in this area and wanted to learn more. So yeah, we did a series of a couple classes.
That's cool. They looked beautiful. Like your whole presentation is very polished and you had special graphics for these intensives basically. So they would be like a half day or how did you set those up and how did you price those?
They were a four hour course. The first one had like a field to vase type dinner at the end. And so, yeah, we started with, that was at my peony farm here in Little Compton. And they taught all the science behind growing peonies. They have an amazing, amazing collection. I forget how many different varieties, but it's something crazy. And then I came in and taught a handheld bouquet, very asymmetrical and loose, garden-esque, the way the vibe is going right now in the wedding industry. And then we had a dinner afterwards.
Oh my gosh, that must have been fabulous. Yeah. Will you share a few photos of that event so I can put them on the show notes? Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. And you know, how cool to co-teach with your farmer and bring them into the conversation.
I know. It was giving them promotion as a little farm. It was giving me promotion as a design, you know, boutique studio. And it was just having that sense of community. I think it's so easy, especially where I am in New England, just to stay in your shop and not make those connections. But I really believe in getting out there and not just with my wedding clients, but with my classes too, really making those connections and sharing the love of flowers. So that was really cool to do with my farmers and they all were really on board for it. So that made it cool.
And so, and you, it seemed like you priced them individually or somebody could actually invest in the whole series of the three workshops, right?
Yeah, we started the ticket price a little bit higher than what the, you know, what everybody was willing to pay a little bit, but it was good. It was good to see what was wanted by the community, you know, what was needed. And so on the second one, we taught a dahlia class at my dahlia farm at a brand new post and beam farm. It was a gorgeous venue. So we didn't do the dinner on that one. And it was a big hit. We had a lot of people from the garden club and that was a bigger class. So learned a lot for next year when we do it again next year.
What is your ideal student size then for that kind of class?
I think we would cap it at about 15 just to keep that intimate atmosphere. And really people had a lot of questions for my farmers, which was so cool to see. So giving that time for everybody to get involved and ask, you know, their questions.
Well, that's great. I love that model. And I love that you, I was thrilled to see that you decided to up your game as a designer and get involved with kind of this elite group of wedding and event designers at Chapel Designers. But I also remember when you were there at the New York conference, was it in 2015, you and Jimmy Lohr of Green Center and some, I can't remember who the third person was, you guys texted me a photo of yourselves and you said, we're starting this Chapel Designers subgroup of slow flowers designers.
It was kind of hard to go and like see all the amazing product at the New York Flower Market and know like, okay, a lot of this is not American grown. Holly has since bought a farm and is really an advocate for the American flower movement. So that's really cool to see.
Oh yeah. I have to take a little credit for that, but she was well on her way. She comes from a family of flower farmers. So I'm glad she returned to her roots. Who was that third person besides you and Jimmy?
Carol Mann from Bramble Bittersweet up in Connecticut.
That's right. Yeah. I'm going to try to find that photo and put it on the show notes. That cracked me up. Well, your business has changed in many ways, more than just becoming the sole proprietor and, you know, creative director. But it seems like you're bringing other facets in besides weddings and events, and with this emphasis on education. Are those sort of the two main branches of the local bouquet now, or other things cooking?
No, it's all weddings and events, and then the classes, both, you know, the intensive side of classes and then the everyday type, more casual classes. I've had a new commercial space in the next town over for the last year, and I just made the decision to completely restage it and kind of reinvest in the space. And so I'm about to have a big launch party in it at the end of October. And we've staged it to be a classroom, basically. So there's big workbenches and there's a meeting place for my bridal clients still, but it's really going to be an environment where people can rent it out for private floral design classes, as well as when I have scheduled classes around the holidays and stuff like that. So I'm so excited to, you know, get back in the space and open it up to the public.
How big is it?
I don't remember the square feet, but we can fit 18 students in it.
Great. Yeah. And you're never going to do, I mean, this isn't being treated as, it may be a storefront, but it's not a retail space. Or are you still doing some pop-up store projects?
Okay. I think just being a mom of three, it doesn't work for me right now. Maybe when the kids are all in school, I would love to have a brick and mortar. That's kind of, you know, my dream. But for right now, it just makes sense to focus on the weddings and the classes because they're on my calendar and I can schedule babysitters.
Right, right. Yeah. What are your, I know you have a new, a baby that just was born this year. What are your kids' ages?
4, 2.5, and 5 months.
all under five. None are in kindergarten yet.
No, nope.
Poor thing.
They were filling the water buckets for me this morning and ready for the weddings.
So do you have a nanny or a grandparent? Or
yeah, just grandparents helping out. My studio is in the back of my house. So my office is in the next town over where I can leave and, you know, go meet my clients. But for all of my design work, I work in my backyard. So it's really nice to have the kids there with me and I can kind of double task at being a mom and being a designer.
Oh, that's why you were saying it's so great that one of your farms delivers right to your front door.
Yes. I mean,
your studio is there.
Yes, it's a home-based studio. So.
And do you have a cooler or how do you manage that?
Yep, we've got a walk-in cooler. We've had it for a couple years now and it's right in my shop. So
wow, that's fantastic. And then you've kind of I guess because you've just been advocating for the nature of your business being seasonal, sustainable, and local, you've kind of gotten some good press. I mean, you've become kind of a spokesperson in the region as well, right?
It's cool to see all of the designers that have been in the game longer than me that are also now supporting the local flower movement. And I'm just so happy for the farmers that I buy from because their businesses are really, really thriving. And, you know, they're just being inundated by all of the other designers in this area. So I'm all for it. I'm an open book. I really love the American flower movement. And it's cool to see everybody just jumping on it and doing so well.
So in a follow-up to that question is, when you said you're an open book, you're bringing the philosophy of sharing your resources with other designers rather than keeping it a top secret. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, on our social media, we're saying like who's growing each bloom and, you know, giving the farmers shout outs throughout the week. And like, you know, I don't let it be a closed book and not say who we're buying from. I really believe that the more the merrier, and these farmers are going to start growing more things that we need, you know, and because the wedding industry is such a different thing than retail, you know, like mm-hmm. color palettes and the textures and the foliages, it really is a refined list of things we're looking for. And so I love that these farmers are getting more and more clients because, okay, now they can grow that thing that I've been asking for, or, you yeah. know, so.
It's a great philosophy. And I applaud you for doing that. I see that a lot here in Seattle with the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market when good and bad behavior. I applaud the good behavior and I always try to weigh in and say, thanks for tagging the farmer. And then when people don't do it, I don't understand
right.
why they're so fearful of sharing their resources, because the farmers cannot stay in business supplying just one florist.
Right.
So
yeah. And we want to see them stay in business for a lifetime. So,
well, so what's up next? I mean, are you trying to recruit more people to grow for you? Are you doing any growing yourself, or, you know, you've got this new space that you're relaunching and you're really going to go deep with like a full on education curriculum? What do you think 2017 is going to look like for you?
Yeah, we've definitely gotten the calendar out and we're booked, you know, for holiday classes and things into the 2016 year, to get us to the following wedding season. My husband and I just built a new house here in Little Compton, and so it's time to landscape it. So I'm definitely excited about planting things that will be a cutting garden for my business. Just the odds and ends, things that you need at last minute when you're doing this kind of work.
Sure.
So I'm excited about that because I did scale back the growing that we were doing when we first launched the company.
Mm-hmm. You just simply couldn't do it all when Maureen retired.
No, yeah. And you know what? I think when you're an entrepreneur, a young entrepreneur, and the years go by, you kind of mature in your mission and your business plan. And I really realized like the growers are good at what they're doing. Let them do it. And I need to be booking more weddings and marketing, you know, our mission. So,
well, you found the value add, which is your design approach features local farmers, but you don't have to personally be a local farmer.
Right. Right. Yep.
That's cool. That's really exciting. What are you planning for Valentine's Day? Anything, or have you thought that far out?
I would love to do, and I wanted to do it last year. It just didn't happen, probably because I was 8 months pregnant. But I would love to do a class that would be a date night, and where the guys would come in and have to make the bouquet for the girl. I love pairing my classes with other vendors, whether, you know, it's a cocktail person or a local jeweler or something like that, and just make it a fun event for a couple to come out and, you know, a date night for Valentine's Day.
Well, and you're, this is alluding back to your community minded collaboration, you know, approach. And, that sounds like a lot of fun. So keep us posted on that.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens. Well, I know we had kind of this agenda for kind of updating everyone on, what's going on with you, Mary Kate, and with the local bouquet. And, you know, I think this is just, you're illustrating, you know, a very healthy kind of intentionality about self-improvement and pushing and strategizing and thinking what works for me and what makes me authentic and unique and what differentiates you as a floral business in your community. I guess I just want to close by asking you, you know, are there any kind of lessons or advice you can share with people who maybe are kind of stuck, and this perhaps this will inspire them to just step back and do a bit of changing?
Yeah, I think for me, and it's probably because I'm a full-time mom at the same time, I really have looked at my company under harsh eyes this in the past year and just say, okay, what is bringing in the income and what do I love to do? And you know, when we first started this company, we were doing everything. We were doing the call-in orders that would come in one at a time in the middle of winter here in New England, and you would run up to the flower market for one arrangement.
Oh my gosh.
You know, just to get your portfolio built and your name out there. And so now that I've done those two things, I really think it's important just to to focus on the things that are bringing in the income and what you absolutely love to do. And for me, it's the weddings and, you know, building that relationship with my brides and then producing this amazing day filled with locally grown flowers for her. So it takes a lot of hard work to stick to the grind and stick to that mission, but it does come after a couple of years. And it's so cool to look at the portfolio of when we first started to now and like look at all of the days we've been a part of. It's really cool.
That's good. That's a really good point. It's like a little bit of tough love with your own business.
Yeah.
And there are people who have completely opposite philosophy. They don't want to do weddings. They want to do dailies or yeah. CSAs or a corporate, but as long as you can clarify that, and then that for personally, for me as a person who chases every bright, shiny object that comes along and is very curious, it's nice to have this sort of stated mission or stated ethos or who are you figured out so that you can force yourself to follow that mandate and not get distracted, right?
Yeah, and I think what I've learned is it doesn't need to happen overnight either. Like just because I'm just focusing on weddings and these educational classes now doesn't mean that in 10, 15 years I won't have a brick and mortar. It just means right now this is what my business is and this is what we're really good at. And so I think in today's society with all the social media and everything that you see, it's really easy to say, wow, that person's got like, they're doing it all and they're so good at all of it. So it's really humbling for me as a young business owner to put the brakes on a little bit and say, no, I'm going to do this one thing and I'm going to do it really well. And then I'm going to go to the next thing. And so,
yeah, that's great. You have everything it takes to be a great mom too, because you're a mom to your business. I could tell. It's like, sometimes you have to say no.
I know.
That's so cool. Well, I hope I see you again soon. I really love seeing you on social. I'm so glad you're part of Slow Flowers, and you've been a supporter from the beginning. So I'm just thrilled to share your update.
Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah, and I know that people will be inspired if they haven't followed the local bouquet. We'll make sure that they have links to all your social places, and even people can send you a note if they want to stay on your mailing list. Yeah. So. If Rhode Island and New England is in your future, be sure to check out the local bouquet's class schedule. And maybe you'd be lucky enough to go take a class from Mary Kate.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I would love it too. Well, thank you so much for doing this today, Mary Kate. And I'm really thrilled to give the second chapter. Maybe we'll do a third chapter in a couple of years.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks, Deborah. Okay.
Bye-bye. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and I'm coming to you from Detroit, sitting in a sunny field behind Jam Handy, where Detroit Flower Week is taking place, and I'm so delighted to introduce Heidi Joint and Molly Colbelt of Field & Florist, return guests to the podcast. Hi.
Hi there.
So great to see you guys again.
I know.
Some of you may recall hearing these ladies on a podcast a couple years ago, coming to us from Chicago when I was visiting, and I'm in the interest of what's up and where are they now, and let's share an update. I asked Heidi and Molly if they'd be willing to kind of walk us through the sort of next chapter of Field & Florist. So I'm glad we're here. You're speaking later on today,
So
you said this is the warm up for your
talk.
This is
their warm up.
Great. Okay. So. When you talk, introduce yourself first so that people can get used to your voices. So, Heidi, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm Heidi. Hi there.
And I'm Molly.
Hi, Molly. Okay. Well, in the last interview, when we did broadcast that a couple years ago, you talked about how you became partners and formed this team to run the business together. Because when I first met Field & Florist, it was just Heidi. And so this obviously is a success story. You guys are still running strong and enjoying the partnership.
Our work-life partnership is going strong.
I know exactly how she likes her sandwich.
Yes, let's clarify. Work-life. I like that term.
Yep.
Great. So you at the time were renting land, right?
That's right. We were kind of more of a borrowing situation from some friends out in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, as we were getting the business off the ground. And we were there for 3 seasons, but it became pretty apparent in year two that the demand for our product was exceeding the supply. And so we began conversation during year two on that site with a lot of other people and looking for new land, looking ourselves to buy. Maybe it was a new rental situation. We just didn't know what was going to present itself, but we were looking for a number of options.
And we looked for about 2 years, too, okay. I think, exploring different things. I mean, for a while we thought, well, maybe we'll buy a farm, and we were looking to buy a farm together. And where we ended up now, is through another small business in Chicago owner that introduced us to a landowner that had a nursery that went out of business 11 years ago that he'd purchased and sort of just been sitting on and was waiting for somebody to activate the space. And we were connected to him. And
wow.
Yeah.
Like a matchmaker. Somebody matchmade.
Yeah.
Really fortunate.
Well, let's back up a second. The land that you had outside of Chicago, which was within about 30 to 40 minutes from the city, what was the acreage you were able to farm on there? And I got to visit that, so I can picture it in my mind's eye.
Yeah, that was half an acre.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. It had such beautiful borrowed landscape that it kind of felt sprawling.
It did feel bigger.
Okay.
It was through, the tree-lined area. It was a really beautiful
space. Yeah, it was. It was. So from a half an acre to this new parcel or farm, I don't know, what do you call it?
Yeah, we call it a farm.
It's a farm. We call it the village.
Okay, there's a story there.
Well, I don't actually know how we started calling it the village. But we call it the village.
Are there many outbuildings? Or?
There are a lot of outbuildings okay. there. So that's part of it, I
What's
suppose.
The size on that one, then, at least that you're able to farm on?
We're currently farming on an acre and a half.
Oh, okay, so you've tripled your production area.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and is this your first season there or your second season?
We just are coming up to the end of our first season.
Wow. So how was that? Well, let's back up a little bit and talk about that relationship. Because you were on borrowed land before, just because I know searching for land is such an issue for new farmers. Is this a long-term lease or what?
It is, okay. Yeah. We have an agreement for 5 years with option to renew, and I hope that we can renew indefinitely. I think space has so much potential. It's really incredible. It's really beautiful, and it's huge. It's 30 acres. We've only put an acre and a half into production for this season because we only added our part-time person up to full-time, and then it's still just the two of us.
Right. So you were just being kind of, let's grow this organically and not on some kind of marathon.
Or
do a marathon, not a sprint, right?
Right.
Okay. Sorry.
And we're still taking, we still had all of our weddings, so the other half of the business is still very design-focused. So we had 40 weddings this year, I think, that we'd booked previously.
Mostly required you to be in the in-city studio.
In the city, yeah. So we still had that. So hiring our farm manager was really big. So she started in March.
Okay. And when did you actually, I guess the transition must have been challenging. Were you able to get all your permanent crops, like perennials and woodies, and transfer them to the new place? Or did you just kind of have to walk away from that?
We moved them to our home properties.
That was smart.
Because spring wasn't an ideal planting time for them. So...
Oh, like last fall?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're putting all of those, back to the new site this fall.
They'll migrate back.
They'll migrate, but for now they're holding somewhere else.
And we hadn't really invested a lot in perennial crops until this point because we knew, we were kind of in this transition and not knowing where we were going to end up.
Yeah.
So we planted, I forget how many peonies we planted last
200.
Fall. 200. And we're slowly investing in more perennial crops since we know we'll be there for
right.
a while.
The long-term lease really supports that decision then.
Yeah.
Now, where is it? Because you were in the state of Illinois, and now you're in a different state, right?
We're in Michigan now, yeah. So we go back and forth between two time zones.
That is so weird.
Deliveries and weddings. It's really inconvenient, but it's,
It makes for a great sunset in Michigan, we've determined. Because we're right on the edge of... time zone when we're there.
So, okay, so you're in Central Time in Illinois and in Eastern Time in Michigan.
Yeah.
So is it east? You're driving east a little bit too, or is it kind of north?
Yeah, it's east and a little bit north, kind of just around the curve of Lake Michigan.
Okay.
And then up into Michigan, maybe just 45 minutes from the border
okay.
of Illinois or Indiana and Michigan.
So the distance is how, for miles or driving, is it how, like an hour?
Hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I kind of have learned from interviewing people that within 2 hours or less is sort of doable. If it's beyond that, it right. becomes a real challenge.
Exactly.
How did you go about making that clean break, though, and pivoting? Because you obviously, like Molly said, you had 40 weddings already booked, but you had to get up stuff planted, right? And yeah. did you just devote yourselves 7 days a week to this transition?
Yes. This has been a very intense year for us. I mean, we've taken on... We didn't drop any of our other work that we had in terms of events and weddings, but added on a farm that's, you know, production that's three times more than we had with more potential. So planning for the future, as well as getting the new site up and running, that was three times more, and getting all those supplies installed, all the irrigation, all of the landscape holes burned, you know, in the fabric. So, and we added an intern for the spring for 2 months, and then we had our full-time farm manager.
Okay.
And we'd never had anyone full-time. So that was our biggest investment, and our biggest jump was really investing in more labor.
Right, right.
To make sure.
Are you still able to pay yourselves? But you obviously have to pay your employees first, right?
That always comes first.
Yeah.
We have taken a hit this year, but, you know, we expected that, and we wanted to make... We had to take that sacrifice, basically, in order to...
Get to the next level.
Get to the next place.
And the... did you have to take out a loan or anything in terms of all this additional infrastructure that you were laying into the new land?
Well, all of the plant materials and all of the kind of soft materials, we call it, the irrigation, all the fabric.
Okay.
Things that really belong to us that we're using, you know, we buy.
Okay.
But some of the infrastructure updates... the really great thing about this landowner is, you know, he did want to fix up his land and really invest in some property improvements. So he's willing to put up new poly on the tunnels, help us with some of the soil costs that's going into his field, which is what we're using.
Yes. Right. Oh, wow.
And it's, you know, so there's some really nice things about this partnership.
You feel like he is investing in... the success of Field and Florist as a landowner.
Yeah.
Because ultimately it's his land. It's going to benefit him too. Right. Oh, so there were high tunnel frames on the land?
Yeah, I don't think we mentioned that. There's 10. Do we determine there's 10?
There's,
I don't know why we can't.
There's 5 that are 145 feet by 30 feet on one side. And then on the other side of the headhouse, there's 8 that are 145 by 15.
Okay.
So there's tremendous infrastructure potential. I mean, your eyes just bug out.
My mouth is falling open. That's crazy.
We're just dreaming of ranunculus and anemones and the things that...
Flower moguls.
...will allow us to grow because we've never had any sort of tunnel space. We've never even started our own seeds because we've never had indoor capabilities. Yeah. So
season extension all over the place on both ends,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So we're just like... You know, this is we're gonna have to work harder, live longer over the year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But at the same on the same token, we're going to have more offerings and be more appealing to florists because they can rely on us as a consistent source for more of the year instead of just, you know, dahlia season or just, you know, July through October.
Is that July through October kind of where your main harvest was up until now?
Yeah.
That's exciting. So you didn't really utilize the high tunnels in 2016, but you know you will for 17. Because you were right before we turned the recorder on, you both mentioned that you have planted some cool season annuals. Though they're in the fields, though. But you could potentially use a high tunnel for that, is right, in the future?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. And we're going to put in some Lysianthus and sweet peas and some kind of early spring sown stuff into the tunnel to experiment.
That's great.
So we're learning a lot still. I mean, you know, I've been growing for over 10 years, vegetables enough, and flowers for 5, but it's like every year there's still so much to learn and to get a better grasp on, and, you know, it's like a constant evolution, really.
Well, it's great that you don't have to do it alone, and I think that it's, from the outside, looking at the way you guys operate, it seems like a really successful partnership. How do you divide up who's doing what? I know that we talked about this a little bit in the last podcast, and Molly, you were a little bit more on the marketing side.
Mm-hmm.
And is that right? And Heidi, you were kind of more on the farmer, but have you morphed into doing a different balance now? Or
I mean, I think a bit. It's kind of nice. It actually has naturally sort of worked itself out. Heidi definitely handles all of the growing, and she manages our farm manager. And really the interns as well. because that's where your expertise lies. And
because the interns are farm interns.
Yeah.
We still both do all the design work. We'll hire freelancers for installations and some, you know, bigger weddings, but we're still doing all the design work. I'm doing a lot of the meetings with the brides and kind of that initial
intake
consultation.
Kind of, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And doing, you know, the business end of things and managing our invoicing and our wholesale system. But yeah, we're both still, you know, doing weddings, doing the design stuff.
Yeah.
We're seeing everything. It just, it works out really well. I don't.
And when you're in Chicago, do you have a place you work or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know about that.
Yeah. We have just a design studio.
Okay.
So we had a studio in on the north side for a while when we were in Barrington. It makes sense because the farm is on the north side.
Mm-hmm.
Now we both, Heidi lives in Pilsen. I live in Humboldt Park, which are, you know, a little bit further south and west of the city. So our studio is actually on the second floor of my garage.
Okay.
It has been there for 2 years, which has worked out great for us in terms of transitioning the farm and having that sort of movement going on.
You had to have stability in one, at least one home.
Yes. Yeah. So it's worked out really well. So we work out of my garage right now, but we're going to move the studio this spring. We need a bigger space because we're doing kind of bigger weddings, or if we do multiple weddings a weekend.
Well, and you have done workshops in the past. You could, if you had a space that would accommodate
that,
right?
And that's the goal, is to have, you know, kind of just a bigger space. We need a walk-in cooler because we're bringing product from our cooler at the farm, and sometimes the deliveries, like, you never
staggered
know.
Staggered or whatever.
So,
yeah.
And we'd love to have a place, too, where people, you know, the florist can maybe come shop a little bit more in terms of what we have, because all our wholesale is the same system. It's all done online and pre-orders.
Okay.
And it's a lot to manage. We have 82 florists on our wholesale list.
That when you told me that yesterday, that blew my mind. Because when we did the podcast before, how many did you have a couple years ago?
Maybe there were, what, 20 at that point?
Max,
or
yeah.
And now it's spread out there, you know, where there's florists contacting us in Michigan and Indiana. So it's all spread out now because we're situated in a new place. And
how did that grow? Is that just an intentionality? Like, okay, we should sell what we can't use in our wedding this week. We should find another taker, or
it was honestly, it's word of mouth, and the florists that we've been selling to, they've been buying us from us all along, have been really great about promoting us, and Instagram too, you know. Mm-hmm. They're tagging these beautiful dahlias and people were seeing that and
then
I think
reaching out to you.
Yeah. It happened really naturally, and there's always people emailing being like, how do I get your flowers? Or and the amount of people too, just in Michigan near where the farm is, it's a pretty popular vacation destination in the summer for Chicagoans.
So there's like destination weddings up there and stuff?
Yeah, we've done more weddings. There's a couple wedding barns around the area. So we're working more in Michigan, which is cool.
What area, what do you call that area of Michigan?
It's called Harbor Country.
Okay.
We're sort of in between a couple different towns. I think technically we've realized we're in Three Oaks. We're very close. We're about 20 minutes from the lake.
Okay.
Which is great. So on really hot days, we go to the beach. After work is amazing.
Oh, it sounds like the reward that keeps you going.
It is. On those hot days when you know you can go bring a bottle of rosé to the beach. It's great.
I'm trying to look at the map in my mind's eye and think about people from Michigan, Illinois, and Indiana all wanting to buy flowers from Field & Florist. How does that happen logistically? Are they asking you to do deliveries? And
yes, we do deliver.
Okay.
We hired a delivery driver, which was huge. Amazing.
Oh, I can't imagine. Yeah.
So our current setup is that we're harvesting on Monday and Tuesday, and we're delivering on Wednesday and Thursday to florists. So a lot of times they're purchasing from us for their events.
Right. So that time, that's a natural schedule.
We have a delivery radius within the city, that we deliver to. A lot of people in Michigan and Indiana are just coming to the farm to pick up.
Okay.
And
for them, it might be worth it to drive 30 to 60 minutes to get beautiful local product that they can't get anywhere else.
Yeah. And they get a chance to see the farm and maybe they see other things that they want to buy. And,
do you have a cooler on the farm?
Yes. We built a large walk-in cooler.
Okay, great. That was sounds like one of the first things you did.
Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's the size of a small studio apartment.
Wow.
It's great.
On those hot days, you like to work on the cooler, too.
Yeah, but we have cooler outfits. So, because it gets, you know, it's 42, 43 degrees in there. So, you know, it could be 90 degrees outside.
Oh,
I'm organizing orders in there and like a hat and like Carhartt and my fingers are numb.
That's very strange to imagine.
It's very weird.
Your body is.
Yeah.
Good thing you're young. Your body can adjust. But I can see where having this hub in Chicago is ultimately going to help you grow your wholesale business. Mm-hmm. Almost, you'll almost become your own wholesale house.
Yeah.
If people can come in and shop.
Yeah, that's something we're like interested in exploring, and even inviting some other small growers in who aren't big enough to sell to the local wholesale house, but could be a place for all of us mm-hmm. to get rid of our product
right.
and to get local flowers into the hands of florists who value them and want to use them.
Right.
Because I think there is a bit of frustration with, you know, lack of quality at times from the wholesalers or lack of labeling, you
right.
know, no one knows yeah. where exactly things are coming
right.
from.
Right.
And, you know, it's not that we're trying to outsell the wholesalers. It's just, you know, offering something else that other people want that they can't get.
Absolutely. No, I absolutely think that this is happening in pockets all over the country in very varying business structures. You know, yes, the cooperative model is one that I'm familiar with Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, but it's basically become a business that has staff and has buys in product as well from other vendors, especially in the winter. So I think the model that you're talking about it's great that you see it as an opportunity to collaborate with other farms and not keep it all to yourself
right.
because you want those florists to get hungry and want, you know, and keep them satisfied.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Huh. So
that's where it makes us feel less isolated in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I
ran into another farmer in the kind of the convenience store in our small town from where we were farming. And, you know, we were just hovering over the snack aisle. Like, so how was the winds last June? And, you know, what kind of rain did you get? And it's just like, you just crave that likeness of mind
yeah.
when you work so hard and, you know, you understand each other. And so it's nice to feel like there is community in doing this.
And yet you're also in another community. You're in the floral design community, right? Because
yeah.
of your wedding business. has there been any kind of odd response or perception that you're competing with your customers when you're selling to florists who perhaps are also bidding on weddings
right.
that you might be bidding on? Has that come up or...
I mean, I'm sure we are bidding on some of the same weddings.
Yeah.
I think for the most part, we've been really fortunate to experience a lot of goodwill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've tried to extend the same.
Mm-hmm.
And
like referring jobs
absolutely.
To people.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's, you know, there's a lot of things we can't take on and don't want to. And we're happy to mm-hmm. give business to other people. It's mostly the weddings that we're focusing on
right.
for larger events.
Right.
But yeah, for the most, I think... I can't even think of one instance where
that's awesome.
Been
I think that's
sticky.
been sort of a latent fear that I've heard voiced, but it maybe now that there's this extreme demand for local flowers, you're not running into a situation where you're taking business away from people. There's just opportunity for more people to use local flowers as soon as the flowers are available.
Right. And there's such different aesthetics out
mm-hmm.
there. I
yeah.
really do believe that clients will be attracted to the kind of florist who is going to suit their needs the best.
I agree.
And I think that's even more of an argument for really developing an aesthetic that's true to your business and to your vision of what floral design looks like. I've been really inspired here listening to Emily Thompson
yeah.
and, you know, Joseph Massey, you know, as different as they can be and as they are to us in terms of aesthetic, it really drives home for me the fact that, you know, we should all really just be in hot pursuit and relentless
expression of who you
expression
are.
Expression
yeah.
of who we are
yeah.
and what we value in our
yeah.
in the way that our designs look.
So, putting you guys on the spot, can you articulate what is the Field and Florist aesthetic? I mean, I know that people who are listening are all probably following you on Instagram. If they haven't, we are going to give them the link so that they do that. Because with Instagram and the explore, even when we talked 2 years ago, Instagram was not even a tool, right?
Or yeah, very
maybe just starting.
Yeah. Little used.
Now it's possible to really, I guess, if someone were to try to, didn't know who they were, to just copy the rock stars out there. And that's the negative side of Instagram. The positive side of Instagram is that more people are finding you and seeing what that distinct look is. And I mean, I think with the word field in your name, it implies that it's of the field and of the meadow and of the farm. When someone asks you what your aesthetic is, though, what do you pull out and dish up?
You know, it's just like a time when we're really grappling with this right now. Because
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No. It's really good because we're thinking about this a lot as we're rebranding kind of our website and really working on creating content, visual content,
right,
that people can see and understand more about what we value and what we're doing. So we're conceptualizing some shoots right now. We've already done one a couple weeks ago for the site launch next spring.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we have done in the past and what we still feel is safe and desirable and pretty natural to us is that loosely structured, garden-inspired, seasonal bouquet, seasonal arrangements.
With a lot of diverse elements, too, right? A
lot of diverse elements and texture and dimension. Mm-hmm. You know, we like things that are filling negative space and positive space.
The great thing about the new farm, too, is there's the foraging potential is amazing.
I can only imagine.
And the things that we found to use that are just, you know, we found a persimmon tree. You know, and just to have that on the property to access has been awesome.
So your palette is getting more, having more depth as well.
Yeah, and it's challenging us to look at these materials that we, you know, haven't used before and seeing how we can use them, incorporate them with our flowers. And
that's exciting.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Wow.
Just finding the time to do that.
To create for the sake of creating for ourselves.
Right. You're investing in that. Well, you said you're doing some of these almost editorial style concept shoots then that will be when you relaunch. You're not changing the name of the business or anything.
No. Okay. But I think, you know, to us, like what feels important right now is, you know, because of the visual culture of social media, you know, being something or being a business that is trying to have a unique voice that isn't swimming with the stream is really important to us. It's important to be challenged to create and to dream new things. And, you know, everyone is inspired by, you know, art and things that we all can see around us. And it's how we interpret that to make something that feels like a unique expression.
I love that.
Important work and it's hard work. And it takes time, and we don't always have the time, but we're trying to create the time. And we've done we did a really bizarre concept shoot because we wanted to see what it felt like to play with putting cafe au lait in a bizarre and kind of challenging environment, because they're always put in this like sumptuous, like wild, you know, garden.
Romantic, lush.
Spilling over the edge of the vase kind of
thing.
Yeah,
and of course we love to make those, you know, but we also want to see what else they can do. What can these flowers do? What else can they say?
Let's give them another room to stretch in or to appear in.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you can't tell more. You're just going to keep us waiting for that big reveal.
It got weird.
Okay.
We're excited.
I love it. It sounds like you guys really play off each other too. Like you kind of egg each other on. What if we did this?
Just like rip those petals off and throw them over there.
Oh, I think it's great. I do appreciate so much that you're intentionally seeking to know who you are as artists, in a very commercial environment where, you know, not everyone has the luxury to even think about art. They're just cranking out bouquets every week. Mm-hmm. And so you're making sacrifices to do that.
And I think, you know, that's where that tenuous balance between the farming and the design work lies, because at some points that prioritization of creating art and discovering what we can do with flowers as a medium, besides, you know, making this kind of bouquet. And sometimes the farm work does take a hit, and it is on back burner because, you know, at the end of the day, where we are in our business, the wedding work is pulling its weight.
It's underwriting the growth.
It's underwriting the flower farming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that the farming will catch up, but, you know, we're in the marathon and we're two people and we've had four people during the height of the season, but still, that's not a lot.
Yeah.
And so we have to pace ourselves and focus on what we're making money at and all the while still growing these parts that feel important, which is like discovering the voice that we can have with this medium.
Right. And even just thinking about the fact that you're in a marketplace where there is a critical mass of consumers. There's a population that is, you know, large enough to accommodate unique voices and, you know, not just the garden variety, you know, flower shops that sort of do the same old, same old. It's really great. I mean, you could do this also if you were in a more rural or remote area, but it's nice that you're in Chicago where you have that kind of the eyeballs on you.
Right. Yeah. And there's a vibrant art world. I mean, we're friends with a lot of artists that we're inspired by and, you know, that challenge us and inspire us to look at what we're doing and through that lens. Mm-hmm. So
that's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's wonderful. Okay, so I'm just curious to know how you're going to manage your opportunities. Like, I know people will hear this and want to maybe reach out to you about either freelancing or interning. How do you envision next year looking for the farm?
Well, we had a spring internship program, which worked out great. So I think we'll continue to have intern and apprenticeship opportunities available, which you can find on our website.
Okay.
We'll also be looking for help within the studio. We're always looking for experienced freelancers to help out with design or even just other studio work.
Mm-hmm. So depending on if you're a city person or a country person, there might be two opportunities.
Anyone's welcome.
Great. Well, we'll put updated photos of your work, the work that you can show, not the stuff that you're keeping under wraps until next spring, and also ways to get people can get in touch with you at the show notes for this episode at deborahprinzing.com. Thank you both so much. I'm so delighted to see you again. It's been too long.
Thank you.
Yeah. Likewise, Deborah. Thank you.
And I'm excited to see your presentation this afternoon, which we got a little preview of just now.
That's right.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining today's conversation. The Slow Flowers podcast has been downloaded more than 125,000 times by listeners like you. Thank you to each one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. If you value the content you receive each week, I invite you to show your thanks and support the Slow Flowers podcast with a donation. The button can be found on our homepage in the right column. Your contributions will help make it possible to transcribe future episodes of the podcast for download. Thank you to our lead sponsor for 2016, Certified American Grown Flowers. The Certified American Grown program and label provide a guarantee for designers and consumers on the source of their flowers. Take pride in your flowers and buy with confidence. Ask for Certified American Grown Flowers. To learn more, visit americangrownflowers.org. More sponsor thanks goes to Syndicate Sales, an American manufacturer of vases and accessories for the professional florist. Look for the American flag icon to find Syndicate's USA-made products and join the Syndicate Stars loyalty program at syndicatesales.com. A big bouquet of thanks goes to Longfield Gardens, providing home gardeners with high-quality flower bulbs and perennials. Their online store offers plants for every region and every season, from tulips and daffodils to dahlias, caladiums, and amaryllis. Visit them at lfgardens.com. A fond thank you to Arctic Alaska Peonies, a cooperative of 50 family farms in the heart of Alaska, providing high-quality American-grown peony flowers during the months of July and August. Visit them today at arcticalaskapeonies.com. And finally, thank you, Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers, formed in 1988. ASCFG was created to educate, unite, and support commercial cut flower growers. Its mission is to help growers produce high-quality floral material and to foster and promote the local availability of that product. Learn more at ascfg.org. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew and Hannah Brenlin. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com.